It's Wednesday, January 6th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, President Obama orders measures to control guns in the United States.
It was up and down. It was a roller coaster ride again, and the uncertainty remains.
Financial markets remain fragile following Monday's volatility. Also ahead, tensions remain high in the South China Sea. And leave it to Bieber. Justin is back. It's all on today's International Edition. President Barack Obama outlined his initiatives to curb gun violence during an impassioned address to the American people Tuesday, saying people are dying and the constant excuses for inaction no longer do. Surrounded in the White House East Room by gun violence survivors, the families of those killed by firearms, gun control advocates, and some prominent lawmakers, the president sharply criticized Congress for failing to pass stricter gun control measures. Each year, firearms claim the lives of more than 30,000 Americans in mass killings, suicides, domestic violence, and other incidents, according to the White House. The White House late Monday announced a series of executive actions aimed to tighten enforcement of existing gun laws, increase mental health treatment, and expand research into gun safety technology. The issue has generated bitter debate and divided the American public. Critics argue that the measures will do nothing to reduce gun violence. Philip Cook, professor of public policy at Duke University, is the author of a recent study into how criminals in the United States tend to acquire guns. He joins us by telephone. Professor Cook, what did your research reveal?
The article was specifically about a survey that I conducted in Cook County Jail, which serves Chicago. We talked to about 100 inmates there about their life with guns and asked them in particular about where they had gotten their most recent gun and under what circumstances. But I've also done a series of other studies on the same topic and using other data sources. I think that it's fair to say that the answer is consistent that comes out of especially the survey data with criminals, and that is that it's very unusual for them to get their gun by going to a gun store. And in fact, probably nationwide, at least 90% of them say that they are getting their guns from acquaintances, from family members, on the street, from a gang, and other informal sources that are largely unregulated.
Well, the White House today, and President Obama specifically, announced a series of executive orders to try to get some control over the use of guns in the country in response to several mass shootings. They described it as common sense measures, trying to require gun sellers to get licenses, more gun buyers to undergo background checks. Is this a trickle-down kind of effect?
I think that President Obama's proposal would help regulate more of the sales that occur online and in gun shows. Those are not important sources for robbers and gang members directly. But it's quite possible that in some jurisdictions, they are a source of guns to gun traffickers and to the people that supply the underground market. So I think that it's a small step, but it's in the right direction for trying to increase the scarcity of guns.
Is it a situation in the United States where there are just so many guns available that legislation may not be enough to stop it?
Well, I think that what we know is, first of all, there are an extraordinary number of guns in circulation in the U.S. There's something like 300 million, which is enough for every man, woman, and child to have one. But that's not how it works. In fact, only about one quarter of the adult population in the U.S. owns a gun. The ones who own one gun tend to own five or six. And so it's a very kind of concentrated phenomenon. But what I would say is that the regulations that we have in place, weak as they are, do some good. And that has been documented by, for one thing, for evaluation of circumstances where a state, for example, has repealed a regulation requiring a background check and experienced then an increase in their gun homicide rate as a result. I hear from many people that there's nothing to be done because there's so many guns, it's like grains of sand on the beach, but that's not actually true. The fact is that dangerous people have at some point to buy a gun or obtain a gun, and if we can make that more difficult, we can reduce the portion of their criminal career in which they are armed.
The article online is titled Criminals Acquire Guns Through Social Connections, and Philip Cook, professor at Duke University, is the author. Professor Cook, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure entirely.
Well, it's time now for our social media segment with International Edition's G. Abby Lee, and as always, she's right here in Studio 22 to tell us the social media reaction, this time to the president's speech. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. The internet is buzzing with passionate responses, to put it mildly, to the president's speech. To briefly recap what Professor Cook said, Mr. Obama called for a series of executive actions on gun control Tuesday, and they include extensive background checks for potential buyers and new requirements to report lost or stolen guns in transit.
Gun ownership and control are what Americans take quite personally, So I can only imagine the reactions. Who do we begin with?
Let's start with the White House. Its Facebook account shared a clip of the president's weekly address Monday and included this caption. Each time we are told that common sense reforms like background checks might not have stopped the last massacre or the one before that, so we shouldn't do anything. We know that we can't stop every act of violence, but what if we try to stop even one? It used the hashtag StopGunViolence.
I'm sure there were some replies to that post.
Oh, absolutely. The public's comments are what this segment is really about, so let's check one out. The first reply, the one that got the most number of likes so far, reads like this. Thank you, Mr. President, for doing something about this and protecting our children. About time someone stands up to the NRA versus cowering and sticking their head in the sand. Even if it stops one attack, it's worth it. Our founding fathers didn't intend to have assault weapons flooding our streets and putting us all in danger. Time to fight back. That reply got more than 1,600 likes. Jim, now that we have checked out what the White House had posted on Facebook, it's time now to check out, you guessed it, what the NRA shared on the same day. The National Rifle Association wrote this on its Facebook page. Today, President Obama met with his Attorney General to discuss rolling out new executive orders on gun control. Too bad they won't do anything to make Americans more safe.
Well, no doubt that should call for some interesting replies.
It certainly did. The first person to respond asked a rhetorical question. Maybe he, referring to the president, should give up his Secret Service for him and his family. Why should he have the right to protect himself, but law-abiding gun owners can't? That comment got around 2,400 likes. Another person wrote, "This isn't about protecting us. It's about protecting themselves from us. A disarmed nation is far easier to control." Now, that's all for me today. Jim?
Well, looks like it might be a rocky road ahead for the executive actions on gun control. Thanks so much for that update, G. You can follow her on Twitter at her own account, at G. Abby Lee, or right on our own program account. That would be at @VOA_IE. I'm also out there on Twitter as well, at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This is VOA's International Edition. The United States has expressed concern over China's decision to land an aircraft on the Fiery Cross Reef. That's one of several reef reclamation efforts in the contested Spratly Islands in the South China Sea. A Chinese foreign ministry spokeswoman said Monday that China has full sovereignty over what it calls the Nansha Islands and its adjacent waters. China's landing of a civilian aircraft on the reef also has drawn criticism from neighboring Vietnam, which has claims to the Spratlys as well. Brad Glosserman, executive director of the security think tank Pacific Forum in Hawaii, told VOA's Victor Beatty that he's not surprised China sent an aircraft to land on an airfield that it constructed.
This is what they put them out there for, and consequently, this is what we should have expected China to do. I think we, in many ways, overstate the capacity and the potential for a serious shift in the strategic balance. They have the capacity to make mischief and to create asymmetries, if you will, in some defense situations. But if the United States and regional powers refuse to accept the Chinese territorial claims upon which these islands are based and these new facilities are based, then it becomes difficult for them to, I think, employ them in a meaningful way in events of crisis.
Is this aircraft landing a precursor to an air defense zone?
The Chinese would like to think that. The problem they're going to have, of course, is the drumbeat of protest that has been greeting them since the reclamation projects began, or even since the territorial claims were made, will make it very difficult for that to be accepted as anything other than a rhetorical blast by the Chinese, if you will, rhetoric rather than the reality of an aid as they're known.
This received a strong protest from Vietnam. China dismissed it, saying this is part of Chinese territory.
The Chinese have made that claim for quite a long time. And the fact is that the Chinese will continue to make that claim. The problem, of course, is that international law and most of those countries and others refuse to recognize the validity of that claim. The Chinese need to do more than make a historic claim that these have been part of Chinese maps for hundreds of years, as they like to claim. They're going to have to make an actual legal claim that is consistent with the principles of international law, and thus far they've yet to do that.
Well, Brad, the U.S. State Department weighed in Monday, saying to begin flight operations of this new airfield in a disputed area, quote, raises tensions and threatens regional stability.
I think that's true. It's difficult at this moment to say who is responsible for, if you will, lighting the first particular fuse or throwing the first sparkler. The problem, of course, is that everyone sees this from their own particular vantage point. So just as we complain that the Chinese are unilaterally changing the status quo is one of the phrases in increasing tension, the Chinese response is that, as you've mentioned, this is our territory. Secondly, they will say that we are merely responding to the reclamation activities of the Philippines, the Malaysians, and the Vietnamese that have been going on for over a decade. And third, they'll say that the Americans are stirring up tensions with their freedom of navigation operations. A great deal of this has to very much do with you, which particular side you're on. But nevertheless, I think we could all use with a little slowing down. And unfortunately, I don't believe we're going to see that. We're going to continue to see an incremental ratcheting up of tensions and actions of this nature.
The chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, John McCain, criticized the Obama administration for delaying patrols in the region. In late October, the guided missile destroyer USS Lassen sailed to within 11 kilometers of Subi Reef in the Spratlys in what the Pentagon called a freedom of navigation patrol. 2016 began with a tumultuous ride in global financial markets Monday when indexes in China fell as much as 7%. VOA Beijing correspondent Bill Ide tells International Edition host Sarah Williams that investors, especially in Asia, have caught somewhat of their breath in trading Tuesday.
Analysts are telling us that this is largely because the government moved in to kind of shore up stock prices, you know, funneled some money into the market to stabilize it, and that, you know, that ended what we saw on Monday, this sharp decline. That said, it was up and down. It was a roller coaster ride again, and the uncertainty remains. And one of the things that securities analysts that we've been talking to today have pointed out to us is that this is the big question here is where is the economy going? And the answer to that is still very much unclear. And as long as that question or as long as there's no clarity on that, this kind of turmoil in the market is likely to continue.
What are the causes of this, of the fact that the economy seems to be unclear at this point? Is it because of the government or is it because of industry finances itself?
Well, there's always been a lot of distrust about the figures that the government release. And in the government's 13th five-year plan, which goes till 2020, the government is projecting that growth will continue at about 6.5 to 7%, which is a bit higher than and stronger than the kind of growth that analysts and experts expect China to continue to experience. And in fact, there are some who say China's economy has already slowed to much less than what officials are reporting. There's always been questions about, you know, the numbers. There's not a lot of transparency here about that, and that feeds into this uncertainty. The other thing that is causing some concern is that the government has increased the controls on the market. And what we saw on Monday actually was the first time that these new circuit breaker measures were put into practice. And what that is that when the market falls by, say, 5% during trading, trading is halted for 15 minutes. And if that continues and it goes to 7%, then trading is halted for the day entirely. And some say that these measures are needed to kind of stabilize the market, make trading a little bit more regular, kind of a little bit slower. But others are saying that it's not necessary, and it's actually fueling fears. It's making people wonder that, okay, the economy must be a lot worse than the government is saying, because they've instituted these measures to really tighten down on the movements of the stock indexes.
VOA's Bill Ide in Beijing. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Well, you probably would have guessed it that this day would finally come. Justin Bieber is back in the spotlight. Now, in recent years, that statement usually meant that he was connected with some sort of controversy. Today, as we hear from VOA Border Crossings host Larry London and International Edition host Susan Yaki, it's about his music.
'Cause if you like the way you look that much, oh baby, you should go and love yourself.
Love Yourself. It's from his new album, which, by the way, happens to be Justin's fifth album to sell over a million copies. So, yes, Susan, you're right. He's had a lot of problems in the last couple of years. And he says himself, you know, he learned from his mistakes. He's turned the corner. He's 21 now. Let's face it, when he first got fame, he was just a teenager and wasn't ready to be making $40 million, $50 million a year and having all the attention he was getting at the time. So, you know, he says he's grown up, he's learned from his mistakes, the year is still young, but we hope that all of this is true. He's going out on tour for his new album in the United States. It's a world tour, but it starts in the U.S. in March, promoting his new album Purpose, which he said finally has given his music purpose.
Well, let me ask you about this. Has he lost some of his fan base as a result of not being as bizarre as he was before? Or
absolutely
his
not.
Good looks and his good voice and his
yep.
good dancing are carrying him on.
Exactly. Not only has he managed to sustain the fan base he developed as a teen, he's now attracting their moms in the older generation who are attracted by the very things you just mentioned, his abs and his good looks and all. You know, he's a blonde-haired, blue-eyed young boy, grew up in Canada. on a very, very meager income. His mom was the one who raised him in Canada as a single parent, didn't have any money coming in. They were on food stamps for a while. He got discovered on YouTube with his videos and music, and he's just lit it up ever since, and he's going out on tour. The new song, by the way, which is the third from his Purpose album, is already the first number one song in the UK.
Wow.
not the first ever, obviously, but the first one for 2016.
Well, tell me about Love Yourself.
Love Yourself. Now, that's an interesting song. He says the whole album was inspired by his relationship with Selena Gomez. He's admitted that. The two of them are no longer together. In fact, he's been on vacation with his new girlfriend, 19-year-old Haley Baldwin, the daughter of actor Stephen Baldwin. And so he made it known to the world that the two of them are in a relationship because he just put on Instagram a photo of the two of them kissing. But the album, he says, was inspired by the love he still holds for Selena Gomez, and it's a beautiful ballad.
Okay, well, let's hear it right now. Thank you very much, Larry London of Border Crossings, for stopping by.
Oh, thank you, Susan, for having me.
And if you think that I'm still holding on to something, you should go and love yourself. When you told me that you hated my friends, the only problem was with you and not them. And every time
when Justin Bieber sings, people hear him. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at our website, voanews.com. We're there any time of the day or night. We're also out on Twitter. You can follow us at VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter and our engineer, Greg Burns. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We thank you so much for joining us and look forward to getting together again. Come back and see us. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The board of directors of the Millennium Challenge Corporation recently held its quarterly meeting and approved three countries as eligible for compacts and two countries as eligible for threshold programs. MCC is an independent U.S. government agency working to reduce global poverty through economic growth. Three of the five countries are new partners for MCC, and all have worked hard to improve their performance on MCC's scorecard, which measures countries' commitment to ruling justly, economic freedom, and investing in their people. The board selected Côte d'Ivoire, Kosovo, and Senegal as newly eligible for compacts. Côte d'Ivoire, which was selected in December 2014 for a threshold program, will now transition into the compact program after showing continued improvement on its scorecard and achieving greater political stability. Kosovo, which passed MCC's scorecard for the first time after making progress on democratic rights, is a new partner for MCC. Senegal successfully completed its first MCC compact in September and demonstrated improved scorecard performance over the life of the partnership. In both Senegal and Côte d'Ivoire, the board recommended that MCC explore potential investments that address regional obstacles to economic growth, in addition to domestic investments, while recognizing the need for statutory authority to optimize regional impact. The board also selected Togo and Sri Lanka to develop MCC threshold programs. Togo has shown a clear upward trajectory on overall scorecard performance over the past few years. Sri Lanka has embarked on a remarkable effort over the past year to reinvigorate its democratic institutions, improve governance, and restore protection of human rights. Nepal, Niger, and the Philippines were reselected by the board to continue developing their compacts. The board reselects all countries in compact development as part of the annual selection process. The board deferred a vote on the reselection of Tanzania and Lesotho for compact eligibility until relevant governance concerns in both countries have been addressed. Finally, the board reaffirmed its commitment to developing a compact with Mongolia and its support for a potential strategic partnership with India to advance economic growth and poverty reduction in South Asia. The United States, through the Millennium Challenge Corporation, is proud to work with its partners, new and old, in meeting the development challenges in the years ahead.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.